Hello, fellow educators, and welcome to episode 42 of the West Virginia Leaders of Literacy podcast. I'm your host, Becky Lewis, and joining me as my co-host this month is Brittany Fike. Today, we are continuing our conversation around positive student-teacher relationships, and joining us in this exciting conversation is educational expert Weston Kieschnick. This is the West Virginia Leaders of Literacy podcast, where we engage in educational conversations to strengthen early literacy in West Virginia. Are you ready to become a leader of literacy? Hello, listeners, and Brittany, welcome back. I am so excited today to be wrapping up our episode on talking about positive teacher-student relationships.
Thanks, Becky. I am so excited to be here and to be continuing this important conversation and with our very special guest.
Yes, we have joining us today Weston Kieschnick, and Weston is an award-winning educator, bestseller, TEDx speaker, coach, husband, and father. He's also the author of Bold School and Breaking Bold, and has co-authored The Learning Transformation, A Guide to Blended Learning for Administrators, and the creator and host of Teaching Keaton, one of the most downloaded podcasts for educators and parents on iTunes. Weston, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Ladies, thank you. Becky, Brittany, I appreciate it. I'm excited. Let's geek out. Let's nerd out a little bit about kids and relationships and teaching and all things teaching and learning. I'm in.
Yes, we are so excited to have you here. I'm super excited for our listeners to get to hear from you to discuss the importance of positive teacher-student relationships. I do have to admit, I kind of feel like I'm checking something off my bucket list by getting to have a conversation with you. So I'm super excited.
Super kind of you to say. For as excited as you are, I'm excited to be here. And I appreciate the kind words. And it's always a pleasure to get the chance to talk to other educators who are equally as excited about doing great work for kids, probably the best part of my job. And so, ladies, thanks for sharing your time with me.
Definitely. I think we would agree. So I'm just going to jump right in, and we have some questions for you that we're excited to hear you discuss. And my first question for you is, just in your words, what do relationships mean in teaching and learning?
Yeah, so relationships are a cornerstone. They're the foundation for everything that needs to happen in a healthy classroom, school, or district culture. You know, it's not one. You know, relationships is a word we use all the time in education, and we talk about relationships, and we have to gain an understanding that, so often in schools we talk about, achievement gaps. I don't think we have a lot of achievement gaps. I think we have a lot of relationship gaps for kids. And so we have to understand the single greatest gift that we can give a child is it's not more content. It's not more stuff. It's not more assessments. It's a relationship with a caring adult who believes with relentless tenacity in their ability to succeed. And so when we start to think about relationships and the role that they play, they're pivotal. I would argue every single one of us on this podcast right now could trace any success that we had back to a relationship with an adult who believed in us and took the time to nurture and teach and mentor us. And so, the good news is we all have the opportunity, regardless of our roles in education, to be that person for kids. And the beauty of it is it costs us nothing. There's nothing that we have to buy. There's no curriculum that we have to have. There's no, all we have to do is make sure the behaviors of master relationship builders and those habits show up day after day and they're visible to kids.
Yeah, and I think that's one important theme that is going through our education system right now, especially in the wake of COVID. It's just being that one caring adult for children, because we do know how important relationships are and that they're the foundation of everything that happens in education and the world in general.
Yeah, Becky, it was. I'm sure I'm not alone. I'm sure many other parents experienced, like when my kids were home during the pandemic and we had to school from home, it was the thing they missed most. Like there was a moment where my daughter had been home, and she, for whatever reason, like she just looked so sad. And I was like, Charlotte, is everything okay? And she just started to cry. And I was like, honey, what's wrong? She's like, I don't know. I just feel sad. I miss my teachers. I miss my friends. You know, it's like, those relationships, I think we discovered really quickly, were the things that people were really, really hungry for. And I think we're all realizing our kids need. You know, they're not periphery elements to a great educational experience. They're at the core of everything that happens. And, you know, when I think about what kids have lost in terms of the relationships that they've been able to build with adults and their peers over the course of the last 17 months, I'm excited to get them back to that.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And we know that it's been challenging because of COVID, but there's been challenges prior to COVID with relationships and educators. So what are some of those challenges that you have seen the most when it comes to teachers building relationships with students or just developing them organically?
Yeah, such a great question. I think one of the challenges is sort of like the self-assessment and the self-reflection that we all do around relationships. And I talk about this in Breaking Bold, the research tells us over and over, we tend to over self-assess in just about every way. We see ourselves, and it's a defense mechanism, right? And so when we think about like, hey, how am I doing at building relationships with kids? When you ask most teachers around the country, they will tell you, great, I'm crushing it at building relationships with kids. And they're half right. The problem is, a lot of us are really great at building relationships with kids, but the problem is we all seem to be building relationships with the same group of kids. And they're typically our kids who are easier to love, and we know who these kids are. But the problem is we've got this massive subset of kids who feel uncared for and unseen because we're out here thinking like, yeah, we're crushing it at building relationships with kids. But the challenge is it's not all of our kids. And if we're going to be serious about educating for the whole child, all has to mean all. And we have to take a look at those kids who are really hard to love sometimes and ask ourselves, like, do they have a relationship with an adult? And more often than not, unfortunately, the answer is no. 414,000 kids were surveyed by Gallup at one point in time across 569 schools in 32 different states. And they were given a number of prompts to respond to. And one of the prompts they were given was, you know, I have an adult who cares about me as an individual. And across 414,000 kids, only 48% of kids said yes.
Wow.
You know, and here's the thing, like, I know they're not right. I know they're not right. I know how much we care about kids, but we have to take an honest look at their feedback and understand, like, what good is it for us to care about kids if the way that we care about them is invisible to basically half of them?
Right.
That's such a good point, Weston. And, you know, in the work that we do, we talk about this a lot. We help provide teachers with strategies to make sure that they're reaching all those students. You know, what are some simple ways you can make sure you're making contact with all students on a regular basis? And you provide some really great strategies that we were able to talk through with our listeners also in our last podcast episode to help them do that. So those came straight from your book, Breaking Bold. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate you. You know, I think people really do underestimate the bridge that a variety of instructional practices can create between us and kids and kids and one another. You know, like if we're like people know who have seen me speak before, like I'm an advocate for explicit direct instruction. You're never going to coach that out of our nation's classrooms. But an explicit direct instruction isn't a bad strategy. It just got a bad reputation when it became our only strategy, right? And so the challenge for us is like, how can we execute on a reciprocal teach? How can we do a Socratic seminar? You know, how can we engage kids in problem solving teaching? Because we know that a variety of instructional practices helps cultivate relationships between us and kids because it allows them the opportunity to engage with the teacher, with the content, and with one another. And that's sort of the golden trifecta of great teaching and learning. Like if those three things are happening, then you can bet that kids are having the opportunity to build relationships. And that's what we want.
Yes. And kind of talking about instruction and, you know, what these positive teacher-student relationships mean. We know that before the kids can learn anything, like you say often in your book, Breaking Bold, we need to make sure that the kids are okay. And so mm-hmm. You talk a lot about that question, are the kids okay? Could you share with our listeners a little bit more about the story behind that question?
Yeah, no problem. So that comes from when my son was born. So I talk to people all the time about the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting, because any new parent, it's bananas. Any new parent is advised to read that book. So much so that I can ask a room of 1,000 people to say, like, hey, you were all advised to read a book before your children were born. Like, what was the name of the book? And they'll all tell me in unison what to expect when you're expecting. And so I, of course, read that book, and it made me afraid of things that I didn't know I needed to be afraid of. Right. So it said all kinds of things like, you know, hey, consider having, one of the things it suggested was consider having a playlist and music playing like in the birthing room when your child is born. I was like, oh God, I didn't know like children are supposed to be born to a soundtrack. Like, okay, like that's a thing I need to worry about. And then, you know, there's a whole conversation of like, you know, to have an epidural or not to have an epidural. And, you know, Molly told me, I'd make a joke all the time. My wife's half Puerto Rican and half Irish. So she's a tough and verbose lady. And so I asked her about the epidural thing. I was like, hey, what are you going to do? And she was like, I'm not going to have an epidural. And I said, I think that's a bad idea. I think you should have all the epidurals, frankly. So we're going back and forth on that. And then, you know, there's the birth plan you're supposed to write out in the back of the book. And so we filled that out really diligently. And the day that my son was born, I'm not going to say who, somebody forgot the iPod, right? It might've been me. And so that, like, good news, Everett was still born to a soundtrack. It was called Screaming and Swearing by Molly Kishnick. Is a beautiful song, right? Original track. And so like I forgot the iPod. Molly ended up having not one, but two epidurals. Right. And I was like, oh man, we're gonna have to talk about this later. Like, she's going to be upset about that. And then last but not least, like I handed our birth plan to the nurse when I walked in the door, and she giggled a little bit, and I never saw it again. You know? And so like in the midst of all this chaos, I remember talking to our doctor, Dr. Stallworth, who was this great old doctor. And I swear birthed Moses. He had been around forever. And I was like, Dr. Stallworth, like, we don't have any of the music. And, you know, like, I don't know what happened to the birth plan. And Molly had a couple of epidurals. She didn't want to have any epidurals, but she decided to have them. And I was like, everything's like chaos. And I remember he just sort of grabbed me by the shoulders. And he was just like, hey, I need you to know, like, Molly's doing great. And we have one job, and that is to make sure this child is okay. And I've thought about that like 1,000 times over the last 17 months, because everything around us has been chaos. Everything has been chaos, and nothing has gone according to plan. And in the midst of all the chaos and in the midst of all the noise, I think it's important for us to reconnect with this notion that we have one job, and that's to make sure our kids are okay. And the hard truth, and ladies, you know this, like, a lot of our kids are not okay. A lot of our kids are not okay. And we have to be clear about what they've endured, because what they've endured is not adversity. It's trauma. They've endured a trauma, and adversity and trauma are different. Adversity is something you can sort of bootstrap your way through. Trauma leaves a scar, and it requires time and healing, and really positive relationships in order to overcome. And so that's what we have to be dialed into.
Right. And a lot of our students, we can connect with them because we've also had to experience that trauma too. And we can kind of be in this together and making sure that everyone is okay. But I know that there are going to be educators out there that are resistant, and they're going to say, it's not my job to make sure the kids are okay. It's my job to focus on academics. So how would you approach teachers that kind of have that mentality?
Yeah, it's an unfortunate mentality, but it's a byproduct of our climate, right? It's a byproduct of the educational climate where everything is tested and only the things that are tested matter. And God, I hope that one day we're going to be able to move beyond this nonsensical notion that, like, you know, our assessments are the end all be all. I hoped it would emerge following global pandemic, but when you look at how quickly those state assessments came back, I was just like, damn, like, we didn't learn anything apparently. And so that's really frustrating for me. I know it's frustrating for a lot of teachers, but you see, you know, Becky, the mentality you're talking about is a byproduct of that culture where what is assessed is what matters. And there are certain things that just don't have metrics. There are certain things you just can't assess for. There are certain things that won't generate numeric data. Relationships is one of them. And so we have to strike a better balance in our field of saying, like, yes, okay, we're held accountable to these assessments. I get it. And what we also know is that influence lives in the place where we build relationships. And, you know, it's not enough that kids leave us having learned something. When they leave us, they're going to have felt something. And the thing that they feel can't just be failure. The thing that they feel can't just be frustration. The things that they feel is they have to feel cared for, and they have to understand what it feels like to care about other people. Because if, you know, if we leave and all they can do is, you know, complete a proof, but they don't know how to talk to the person next to them, like, what the hell are we doing? You know, like, then we talk about losing the forest for the trees.
Right. And I think back to educational experiences where I've been in classrooms as a student, and I can remember those teachers that I had those strong relationships with. Yeah. It didn't matter how I excelled academically at the end of the day as an adult reflecting on it. It was all about that relationship that I had with that teacher.
Yeah. You know, I ask people all the time to recall their most influential teacher, and nobody ever says, like, man, Miss Davis could work a graphic organizer like nobody's business. Like, nobody says that ever. Nobody says, like, man, I'll tell you what, like, Mr. Winter's Socratic seminar game was bananas, right? Nobody ever says, like, you know, oh man, Miss Jones, like, I got such a good grade in her class. No one's ever said that. And I've asked tens of thousands of people that question. No one's ever said anything like that. They always talk about relationships. This person cared about me. This person believed in me. This person authentically listened. Like, those are the things people say.
Yeah, definitely. And I think here in West Virginia, we're so fortunate because we do have leaders who, you know, share the message that we know that the social and emotional well-being of students and their physical health and safety is of the utmost priority, along with academic learning. You know, that the two go hand in hand, and you can't have one without the other. So
you can't. And Brittany, you all in West Virginia know this better than perhaps anywhere else in the country, because I've done so much work in West Virginia. And I think people underestimate, you know, everyone knows, like, yeah, kids get up and they go to school. But like, hey, in West Virginia, like, there are so many kids who eat 2/3 of their meals or potentially all of their meals during the course of the day at their school. I don't think enough people have that awareness. Like, okay, why is that? Well, because, you know, like, the physical and social emotional wellness of a child has to be addressed first before you can teach them anything. And in West Virginia, I feel like you all know that better than anyone, given, you know, how much of the child rearing you actually do with kids from time to time, right down to the basics of just, like, making sure kids are fed.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you mentioned when we were first starting to talk that it's one thing to try to build these relationships with students once we get them in our classrooms, but we have to do it in a way that they feel and that's important to them and that they can make sense of. So how do we make sure that we're making those relationships visible to our students?
Yeah. So in order to do that, we have to distill what we're talking about when we talk about relationships, right? That word relationships lives in the macro. It is a very big word with lots of different interpretations. And so it's what Molly and I tried to do in Breaking Bold is try to distill a big concept like relationships into recognizable and replicable behaviors. Because again, like, if you can distill it, then you can teach it. If you can teach it, you can replicate it. And if you can replicate and teach it, then you can improve upon it. And that's what we wanted to do with relationships, because again, there's this misperception that people have that they're crushing it at relationships when they are for part of their kids. And so, what we tried to do is really distill relationships and say, like, okay, if you are good at relationship building, you're good at these things. You understand the power of perception, right? That everything we do, everything we say, everything we wear, everything we post online sends a message to kids about who we are and what we believe. You know, you understand vulnerability. You understand compassion. You understand trust. You understand belief in kids. I mean, like, take John Hattie's work. John Hattie tells us, like, belief in kids has an effect size of 1.44. You know, when we believe in kids, they can grow more than 3 academic years over a single year's worth of time. Why is that? Well, not because it changes a child's behavior, but because it changes ours, right? When we believe in kids, we'll ask harder questions. We'll provide longer wait times for them to respond. We'll gain greater physical proximity in classrooms to kids who we authentically can believe can succeed. And so it's one of those things where if we can take a good, honest look at our behaviors and say, okay, how am I doing? And then if we're willing to ask kids as well, right? If we're willing to take a habit like creativity, because we know that creative classrooms are highly relational classrooms, and ask kids like, hey, how am I doing? Like, do you get an opportunity to ask questions in class that don't have a right or wrong answer, right? Do you get an opportunity to talk about things that are in the wheelhouse and of things that you're interested in class? And if they're telling us yes, then great. We've created a creative culture in our classroom or in our school. But if they're telling us no, it tells us immediately that this is a place that we can work on, and that will subsequently help us to build relationships with kids. And that's worth our time. That's worth our effort.
Well, in your book, Breaking Bold, me and Brittany had the pleasure of talking through some of the 12 habits of relationship building. We knew we couldn't get through all of them just for the sake of time because they're so detailed. But when we're thinking about those 12 habits, are there any of the habits that you have kind of noticed are lacking more in classrooms and in school buildings that you've interacted with than others?
Conversations about vulnerability. So vulnerability is a habit that shows up. So I love, ladies, are you familiar with Brené Brown's work at all?
Oh, yeah, yes.
We're big lovers of Brené. Yes.
So that's the three of us all together. I love Brené Brown's work. I would tell any of your listeners, if you're not familiar with her work, go watch her special on Netflix. It's an hour well spent. Brené Brown is the world's foremost researcher on shame and vulnerability. And she defines vulnerability as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Right? Uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. And I think we have to understand as educators, that is a place we ask children to enter into every single day. We ask them to enter into a place of uncertainty, to learn something new, of risk, to like people underestimate the amount of risk it takes for a child to put a hand up in class. That is a massive investment of social capital, especially as kids get older. Right. And so like we ask kids to enter into places of uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure, to share out things about themselves. And it's not a conversation we have with them. We just expect that they're going to do it. And then when they don't, sometimes we get real pissy about it. But what we don't realize is that we haven't stopped and paused to have a conversation with kids so that they recognize that we understand the vulnerability that we're asking of them. And to be able to label the feelings that they're feeling, to say like, hey, you got a lot of feels going on right now inside. Like, that is a feeling of vulnerability. Let's talk through that and let's work through it, because it's a thing that we need to overcome if our kids are going to be good learners. But it's a thing we just bypass because we ask them to do A, B, and C. Oftentimes they're willing to do A, not B or C, and then we get upset. And then we just institute all these sort of like punitive punishments. And that doesn't move the needle at all for our kids. All it does is make them hate school.
Definitely. And, you know, I think a part of that too is having conversations with our students about the why, like why this is important, why it's important to be vulnerable and to be able to open yourself up and to build these relationships with your teacher and your peers and, you know, other adults in your life. And so kind of, you know, keeping that in mind, what are some of the positive implications that we can talk with our students about and with our fellow educators that building these relationships has outside of the classroom?
So building these relationships will help our children in almost every facet of their lives, right? Not just academically, but it will help them socially, and it will help them long after they've left us. I think we have all encountered certain adults who have not sort of been able to exercise, flex, and develop the muscles that come with relationship building. We've all encountered these people. We've all met these people who are a bit stunted when it comes to relationship building. For any of you listening right now, and if you're thinking like, I haven't met any of these people, like, spoiler alert, like, you might be this person, okay? Like, we've all met these people. And so I think what we need to recognize is like, if you take a look at people who are not just really successful, but people who are just really happy, people who are just really happy, really enjoying their lives, you'll find that the common denominator is relationship building, right? And so there's a study I reference often that came out of Harvard University. It's the longest ever longitudinal study on happiness. And what they discovered, spoiler alert, right? Happiness is directly linked to the quality of the relationships that exist in our lives. And what they discovered is that loneliness kills. Like, literally, loneliness kills. It is more harmful than smoking. It is more harmful than alcoholism. Like, loneliness kills. And if we don't give our kids the skills that they need to build these relationships over time, what we'll find is they grow up to be lonely adults. And man, like, okay, great. If they performed well on their state assessment, but they grow up to be lonely adults, and as a result, they die earlier than they should have. And I know that sounds really dramatic, but that's what happens when people are lonely, right? It has a really negative impact on them physically. Like, then man, we haven't failed or we haven't succeeded. I still coach high school football, right? I love it. I love it so much. And one of the reasons I still coach, and one of the reasons why I love to coach with the head coach that I coach with, is whenever people ask him, hey, how's the team this year? Because people always, you know, poor guy can't walk through a grocery store without, hey, how's the team this year, right? Yeah. His response is always the same. I don't know. I'll tell you in 15 years, right? That's always his response. And I love it because he explains, like, hey, I'll tell you in 15 years because that's when I'll know whether they're good people. That's when I know whether they're good fathers, whether they're good husbands, and whether they've been good friends. And all of those things have to do with relationships. So he gets it, right? Everything that we're doing right now, so many of the things that we focus on and we put value on are really short term, but the implications for all of our actions are really, really long term. And we have to think about those too.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's such a powerful response. And I think what you said is true. And, you know, we can relate to that ourselves as adults. I know I am the happiest, probably, and healthiest I've ever been. And I think that's a direct result of having the strongest relationships at this point in my life than I've ever had before.
Yeah. Yeah. Brittany, I'm so glad you feel that way, because a lot of people learn during the pandemic, like, oh man, like my relationships are unhealthy relationships because so many people were forced to go home and be with people who were there. It's like, oh man, like we do not have a healthy dynamic. Or people went home and they're just like, oh man, I'm lonely. Like I'm realizing all the relationships I have are people at work or like, and I hope it's allowed people to sort of prioritize those relationships because, you know, Brittany, you're right. Like when you realize like, man, I'm really happy. You can trace that happiness back to those relationships.
Well, we're winding down on time, and this has been such a great conversation, and I could stay and listen to you all day talk about relationships. It's just so engaging, and I know our listeners are going to find it that way too. But we kind of always end the show with asking, what is one tip or piece of advice that you can leave our listeners around relationship building?
Be a good listener. Be a good listener. Especially when it comes to building relationships with kids, oftentimes kids are giving us feedback. And all we have to do is just like pause and listen to be able to hear it. Sometimes kids will give us feedback and our temptation is to, get defensive. Our temptation is to explain why not. Our temptation is to justify, our temptation is to explain potentially why kids are wrong or why, because they're young, that their viewpoints are invalid. And I think we need to set that on a shelf for just a little bit and be okay to listen to the things that our kids are telling us while recognizing, now, like I want to make it clear to everyone, like I'm not advocating that we should hear what kids are telling us and then take their word as the God's honest gospel truth. That's not what I'm advocating for. But I am advocating for us to pause and listen a bit and not to be so dismissive of the things that they're saying. Because a lot of our kids, especially now, are not okay. And we have to recognize that the things that they're saying, the behaviors they're exhibiting that may not be super desirable, they are symptoms of a larger problem, right? It's the behaviors are never the problem. The behaviors are the child's chosen solution to the problem. And so let's listen to that. Let's pause. And before we get real upset, let's recognize that kids are trying to tell us something. And if we open up our ears and open up our hearts a little bit, we can hear it and we can be at our best for kids.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much. Thanks for doing this podcast. Thanks for just being out here in the field and just talking to other great educators about great work we can do with kids. It takes all of us. You know, and uh, I you know, it's a thing that I say at the end of almost every keynote that I give. Like, I'm so grateful to educators. I'm one of those people that owes my life to really great educators. And I'll continue to advocate for the work that we do. I'll continue to shout up from the mountaintops. Education's not broken, right? Anyone who says that is an idiot. Like, education's not broken. Our schools are not broken. Our children are not broken. Their teachers are not broken. And if anyone needs evidence of that, like, look what happened during global pandemic, right? Look where people lined up for help. It was outside of our nation's schools. To our earlier point, you know, Brittany, like, to make sure their kids were fed, but not just fed physically, to make sure their kids were fed physically and academically and emotionally. And look what's happening right now. People cannot wait to get their kids back into our schools because of the amazing work that we've done with them up to this point. We have to remember that.
For links to all the resources discussed in this episode and for additional information, please visit our website at wvde.us/leaders of literacy. Click on podcast and click on the show notes for episode 42. Want to learn more about being a leader of literacy? Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single installment. In the next episode, I'm going to be joined with my co-host for the month, Samantha Statler and Brandy Turner. The focus of our episode is going to be centered around partnering with parents to build early literacy skills in our youngest learners. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening.